Bonjour, lovelies. I'm Valeria, and this is Have Murder, Will Travel. Hey guys, how's it going? Hope all my American lovelies had a great Thanksgiving. I think I mentioned a few episodes ago that I was most looking forward to mashed potatoes, so you better believe that I sure did eat mounds and mounds of mashed potatoes. My stomach still hurts. Also, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but I think I'm developing a scratchy, raspy throat thing. I don't know what it is. My nose has been alternating between running or being stopped up, and now I think it's migrated to my throat. I don't think you can hear it yet, but I just wanted to know in case I wanted to let you know in case I sound a little different. I am drinking hot tea, even though I despise tea in all forms. I'm a good American. I know tea belongs in the harbor. Enough about all that jazz. Let's start the episode. So last week we were way back in time in Scotland for some witch trials. This week we're coming up to the 21st century modernization, y'all. And we are going to France. That's why I said bonjour at the beginning. I think I'm going to start doing that. Like saying hello in the language of whatever country we're visiting that week. I'm a little mad I didn't think of that sooner. Should have been doing that all along, but I'll do it now. So now you guys get to hear me butcher all the languages, not just English. You're welcome. This week, we are going to discuss the murder of Agnes Marin. I want to warn you before we dive in that this is a child case. I hate child cases. I try not to do too many, but once in a while, you just have to. You just gotta. So if you don't want to hear a child case, totally understand. Still love ya. Catch next week's episode. There's also going to be mentions of sexual assault in this episode. I'm not going to dwell on it or get super graphic with it. And I will give you a trigger warning before I mention it. But yeah, if you don't want to chance it, then skip this episode as well. Everyone's still here? Let's dive in. Agnes Marin was born November 26, 1997. In 2011, Agnes was attending a boarding school called Collège Sevenot. I hope I said that right. I didn't actually look it up. I probably should have, but I didn't. So Sevenot sounds right. We're going to roll with it. This was an historic school that had been around for decades. I think there were some reports of it sheltering, or the city at least, sheltering Jewish people during the Nazis. So it's very old, very historical. Some students go there that live nearby, so they're not all boarding students. Some of them are just day students, like traditional school. And then they have boarding students, international boarding students, as well as boarding students from around France. Now, 13-year-old Agnes was one of the boarding students. She was from Paris, you know. I'm just trying to sound French for you guys. It's probably not working. You guys are all like, shut the fuck up. Agnes had just started at that school that year. Her parents, Frederick and Paolo Marin, they sent her there because they didn't like the bad influences at her school in Paris. Most sources just said bad influences. I did see a few things that said they didn't like the company she was keeping. I'm not sure. It's not very important. The point is, they didn't feel like she was in a good environment, so they sent her to this school that was supposed to be a better environment for her, a good influence, safe. And honestly, that makes what happened even worse. Like, they sent her here to help her, and it didn't work out that way. So classmates described Agnes as being outgoing. She had a lot of friends. She was funny. She was creative. She had all these project ideas and she wanted to be a filmmaker. And we all know the best films come from France. So that just sounds awesome. I will post a couple of pictures of Agnes. She looks like a typical 13-year-old girl. She looks, you know, fun, full of life, full of potential. Her parents talked to her on the phone on Tuesday, November 15th, and they said everything was fine, you know, just probably a weekly chat, or I don't know how often they talk to her, but you know, just a regular chat with their little girl. The very next day, Wednesday, November 16th, Agnes went missing. Students first noticed she wasn't studying like the rest of them around 5:30, and they all said that was very unlike Agnes because she was very studious, always showed up to study time. But no one panicked because, you know, it is the boarding school. She does live there. She could have just been in her room. It's 5:30, you know, we don't know what she's doing. But then dinner time rolled around, still no Agnes. So now the other students are starting to get a little worried because they haven't seen Agnes most of the afternoon. And they're like, oh shit, where's Agnes? But the person in charge wasn't worried, which I don't understand. Like, at least go up to her room and check. You're in charge of children. Well, luckily for us, the other students are smarter than the adults in this situation, and they formed their own search party. So about 40 students went out looking for Agnes, and this school is surrounded by woods, or there's like a forest nearby, which sounds idyllic if you don't know that bad things happen in the forest. Feel like Little Red Riding Hood should have prepared us all for that. But some people still insist on going into the woods. Don't understand it. So like I said, about 40 students go out looking for her. They're searching these woods. But after a while, you know, it was getting dark. The woods were hard to navigate. They weren't able to search the whole forest, which, you know, valiant effort to them for trying. Some people did say that Agnes had been seen entering the forest with a fellow student. That student was 17-year-old Matthew Molinas. Now, while Agnes was missing, he was seen coming out of the forest with a scarf over his face. Now, sure, it's November. Maybe it was cold. Or maybe he's trying to fucking hide something on his face. Matthew went inside without saying a word to anybody, and then he took a shower for almost an hour. Now, hey, sometimes it's nice to take a long hot shower, nice bath or something, but sometimes it means you're up to something. The latter is true in this case, okay? He's trying to wash off something he did. The other students then noticed that Matthew had scratches on his face. And so I guess they were like, hey, you know, what happened there? And first he was like, oh, I fell in a puddle outside and scratched my face. Okay. And then he told somebody else, oh, no, I fell here at school. And then he was like, oh, actually, it was from some bushes outside. He just kept coming up with a new story every time somebody asked. So, you know, sounds plausible, believable. Sure, bushes, puddle, whatever. Scratches on his face, we don't need to worry about it. Immediately, the other students were like, yeah, he's acting weird. And our other classmate who was with him is missing. So I'm not right here. So the next morning, they told the head of the school. And that's when the authorities were called in. I personally think the authorities should have been called in Wednesday when she first went missing. But, you know, at least they called them, I guess. Her parents were also called Thursday morning, and they came to help search for their daughter. Oh, man. I'm just imagining being those parents. You want to find your daughter, but only if she's alive. If something else has happened, you probably don't want to be the one to find it. It just, I can't even imagine. You're searching and you want to find out, but at the same time, you kind of don't want to find out. Now, of course, as is always the case with children, particularly teenagers, the police initially kind of floated the idea of maybe she ran away. But that was very quickly dismissed as they started talking to Matthew, because you best believe the police started talking to him, Mr. Scratches on His Face. Agnes's body was found Friday in the woods near the school. Trigger warning, I am going to talk a little bit about what happened to her, so skip ahead a little bit if you don't want to hear it. She had been raped, then stabbed 17 times, and then her body was burnt. They only found charred remains, so not even the whole body. So pretty immediately, our long showering, face scratch having friend was arrested. Now, Matthew was 17 at the time, but he was a month shy of turning 18. But so technically, he's a minor at the time of the crime. So I was not able to find any pictures of what he looks like. I kind of don't care. He's a piece of shit, so he probably looks like a piece of shit. One former classmate said that Matthew had asked a bunch of them about buying a can of gasoline a week before the murder. Now, they didn't think anything of it at the time. They thought he was trying to refill his lighter or something. But now they hear about this happening to Agnes. And now, you know, they're thinking he wanted that gasoline to burn poor Agnes a week ahead of time. Premeditation much? And I've always wondered what it must feel like to be one of those people that the killer, you know, talked to about something ahead of time that seemed very innocuous. And then later you're like, oh, fuck, that was about this crime. I mean, they didn't do anything wrong, obviously. People talk about shit all the time. You don't know what they're going to do about it. But I feel like I'd have some kind of feelings about that. I'm not sure what kind of feelings, but I just know there's got to be something you're feeling. I don't know if it's like guilt. I mean, they shouldn't feel guilty, or if it's just you're creeped out. I have no idea. But I just always wonder about that, because you always hear in cases where they're talking to somebody or they're buying something and the person's just kind of like, ho-hum, whatever. And then later they're like, oh shit, those were murder weapons. Yikes. Now, Matthew supposedly lured Agnes into the woods under the guise of searching for hallucinogenic mushrooms. Of course, who knows if that's actually what he did to lure her into the woods. We only have his word. We can't ask her. I mean, maybe they were looking for hallucinogenic mushrooms. Maybe they weren't. I don't know. Do want to point out that they said they never found any hallucinogenic mushrooms in the woods. Doesn't mean he was lying. They could have been looking for him. I'm just pointing it out. I do have a quick little side note I want to interject in here. Have any of you ever done hallucinogenic mushrooms? Because I haven't, but I kind of think I want to, but I'm a little scared. So if you've ever done mushrooms and want to share your experience with me, shoot me a message. I'm very interested. So anyway, he lured her into the woods under the guise of, let's go pick some hallucinogenic mushrooms, where he, trigger warning, trigger warning, trigger warning. This is when he raped her. He stabbed her to death 17 times, and then he lit the body on fire. So who is Matthew Molinas? Well, he is from the Gard region of France. Gard is in southern France, and the school is north of it. It's still kind of south France. I'd say more south central. And he was even souther. He was more southern than the school. So he's from very south part of France, almost like Blue Coast area. His parents are Sophie and Dominique Molinas. You're going to see near the end of this story, his parents, they kind of suck, in my opinion. Maybe you'll disagree. I think they kind of suck. Matthew has two younger sisters. I did see their names, but I'm not going to mention them because they don't have anything to do with this. And they're still children. And it just feels inappropriate to put their names out there. But if you really want to know, you can find it. But why do you need to know? So he has two younger sisters. He's the oldest. And there were really no traumatic events in his upbringing to point to his bad behavior. By all accounts, he grew up in a quote-unquote normal family. You know, there were the five of them and his parents were present. There was no abuse. There was no neglect. This is definitely a nature, not a nurture situation. One classmate, after all this came out, even said, you know, no one suspected him. He was cultured and friendly. Clearly, that was all a cover. He had been suspended once for a week because he was caught watching pornography on a school computer. I don't get that. Now, I'm not by any means encouraging underage people to watch pornography, but at least do it on your phone or your personal computer. Why are you doing it on the school computer, dummy? Just like people get caught doing that sort of shit at work. I'm like, you know, they're watching those computers, right? Use your own personal device, stupid. And in addition to that 1 week suspension, he had apparently been threatened with suspension twice before that due to poor grades. Guess he wasn't doing very well in school. But by all accounts, after summer break, he had come back and everything seemed to be better. His grades were improving, so they thought, okay, maybe just need a break, everything's fine. After the details of the crime came out, you know, he was arrested, immediately reports started coming out that Matthew was an outcast. You know, oh, he dressed goth. He bragged about being a hacker. He claimed he was a drug user who robbed pharmacies. This completely contradicts what the other classmate said about no one suspecting him. I tend to believe the classmate that was like, yeah, there were no signs. Because to me, people love to pretend like they knew the whole time when any shit like this comes out. There's always people who are like, oh, I always knew something was off. And you're like, fuck you, no, you didn't. Also, people love to point out that he had a girlfriend at school and he'd gotten in trouble for public petting. I fucking hate the word petting when applied to people. I don't know why. It just feels icky to me. Like, no, I pet a dog or a cat, not another human. I know it's technically not the wrong word, but it just grosses me out. I do not like it. Ew. But yeah, I guess he'd gotten in trouble because he would frequently just grope her in front of other people. And it's like, dude, calm down. But I just hate the fact that they're pointing these things out. Like, that's some indication of murder. You know, this always happens in these cases. Oh, well, he was weird, so he must have been a murderer. And, you know, they're pointing out the weird things he did. Like, oh, he dressed goth. It's like, so fucking what? My sister dressed goth. Tons of kids in my school dressed goth. Just means they like to wear black. It's slimming and goes with everything. Also, not in this case, but sometimes you'll see cases where they're like, oh, you know, they listen to rock and roll or they listen to rap or whatever the bad music of the day is. And it's like, again, so the fuck what? Watch what you want, read what you want, listen to what you want. Has nothing to do with you being a murderer. And then, you know, these stories he is bragging about. He is a hacker. He was a drug user. I mean, so he was bragging about that shit. Could they have been true? I guess he had actually had problems with drugs in the past, but according to everyone, he was clean at the time of the crimes and had been for quite a while. More than likely, these were just dumb brags that teenagers say to make themselves sound cool. I feel like that's just something teenagers do, just making up exaggerated stories. I don't know if these were the right things to brag about, but again, teenagers are dumb. Who knows what he was thinking? And then, you know, people are pointing out, oh, he was always petting, ugh, his girlfriend. And I'm like, yeah, he's a horny teenager. If we left him alone, half of them would do nothing but fuck all the time. So none of these things, yeah, they could be seen as weird or strange or odd. None of them indicate he would do these horrible things to Agnes. So I just wanted to kind of let my anger out about all that. I hate, it's always comes up in different cases. Oh, well, you know, he always wore black or, oh, you know, he had books about different religions or, you know, he had a book about witchcraft. Or I once heard him listening to devil music. And it's just like, none of that has anything to do with what this person did or who they were. So it's just like we did that case in Canada with the guy, Mark Witchell, who was all about Dexter, the show Dexter, and wanted to recreate it. It's like, that's not an indictment on Dexter. Millions of people watched that show and did not kill people. So that's all I wanted to get off my chest. So like I said, none of that to me is an indicator of what he might do. But you know what was an indicator? How about the fact that he had done something similar just a year before this? Yeah, that's right. On August 2nd, 2010, Matthew Molinas had lured a 15-year-old acquaintance into a forest. He lured her in under the guise of giving her 10 euros that he owed her. But then, trigger warning again, he tied her to a tree and raped her. This girl believes the only reason he didn't kill her is because her mom called her cell phone during the assault, and I guess that scared him off or whatever. But yeah, he ended up letting her go. He actually said later of this crime, he said, quote, I went up a hill, I prepared the area, positioned the ties, I hid the knife, then I called her. What I was interested in and what motivated me was to hurt. I was set to torture, rape, and kill her, but I lacked experience. I didn't handle it very well, so I ended up untying her. So, of course, he had been arrested for that crime, and he stayed in jail for a whole 4 months, and then he was labeled redeemable, and they said he showed no signs of being dangerous, and so he was released on remand pending trial. I'm sorry, no signs of being dangerous when he tied a poor girl to a tree and sexually assaulted her. Okay, that makes sense. Now, there were some conditions of his release. He had to go to therapy. He was monitored by a psychologist. He had to leave the Gerd region, and he had to attend the boarding school where they could keep an eye on him. Cool. So you sexually assault a young teenage girl, and your punishment is to be sent to a school full of young teenage girls. In what universe does that make any fucking sense? Seriously, I need someone to explain this thought process to me, because I don't understand it. I don't understand why someone who attacked a child was let out at all. But even if he was, couldn't they have sent him to, I don't know, like an all-boys school or even better, homeschool him or something? Like, why is he allowed to be around other potential victims? Who is in charge of this decision? I just want to talk. And I am not the only one who felt this way. This case sparked a lot of criticism in France, and most of the French people were like, I don't understand why he was released at all. Why was he released to a co-ed school? Agnes's mother, Paula, said, it's absurd. It could have been avoided with a little less negligence. I agree, Paula. I agree. What is this? You assault children and they're like, you know what? We should send you to a school full of children. No. And then I have a question about why the hell did the private boarding school accept him as a student? At first, the school said they had not known about any of his past, and his judicial supervisor said that, well, yeah, I wasn't able to reveal too much because, you know, presumption of innocence and privacy. But then they came back and were like, no, no, we told him he was under judicial supervision. They knew about it, blah, blah, blah. And the prosecution in the case claimed that the school knew all along about the rape charges. Agnes's father came out and said, yeah, they knew he had problems with, quote, sexual acts of aggression. But then at the trial, the head of the school said they knew he had problems with the law, but they didn't know what they were. Which, why didn't the school ask? Like, it's a private school. It's not a public school. They don't have to let people in. You're applying to a private school and you say, yeah, by the way, I've had some trouble with the law. I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, what sort of trouble with the law? I mean, this is just making me wonder if they question their teachers. Like, do they have pedophiles on staff and they just don't ask them? This is crazy to me. And honestly, that whole ordeal, we knew, no, we didn't tell, no, you didn't tell us, it pisses me the fuck off almost as much as anything else in this story. Like, a little girl was brutally murdered and everyone's just too busy pointing the finger at everybody else going, well, you should have told me, no, you should have told me, no, I should have known, no, you shouldn't have known. And it's like, somebody knew this guy was dangerous and still they let him be around other children. Super fucked. Now, I guess we can say some good came out of this, if you want to call it that. In November of 2011, the prime minister did announce changes in the legislation, and under the new rules, juvenile offenders accused of serious offenses, such as rape, would not be allowed to be released on remand. They'd have to stay in jail until their trial starts, and any school that these juvenile offenders are sent to must be informed about all their charges. They also started an inquiry to improve the psychological assessment done on prisoners. That's needed because clearly the one that said this guy showed no signs of danger was incorrect. Now, I guess Agnes was so loved and this crime sparked so much attention. There was a memorial march for her on Sunday, November 20th, so just a couple days after her death. Nearly 4,000 people participated in this. They called it a white march. And they basically were all carrying white roses. Some had signs. I'll post a picture of it. It's sad. And now another really sad part of this story is that Agnes was buried on what would have been her 14th birthday, November 26th, 2011. Like, this poor family. They should have been celebrating her 14th birthday, and instead they had to bury her. Now, Matthew did admit to the crime to the police. First, he denied it. Then he did give them an explanation, but everyone said he was very cold and emotionless. He later testified that he had tortured her for hours. He supposedly got no enjoyment out of it. He just did it to hurt her. What the fuck? Also, you did it for hours, but you got no enjoyment. Shut the fuck up. Yes, you did. He gave no motive for this crime. And he also said that he had acquired objects for the crime ahead of time, but he wouldn't say what any of those objects were. I bet at least one of them was the gas bottle that he asked his classmates about. He said, quote, I didn't tie Agnes to a tree, but I tied her hands behind her back, gagged her with a keffiyeh, but keffiyeh and scarves aren't enough. I'll have to think of something else. I did that with very little imagination, really. In any case, I clearly had to do it. There were punches, penetration, bites, torsions, stabs, and locks. And then they asked him locks, like arm locks, and he answered, no, no, headlocks. And he said all of that very coldly and with no emotion. His trial began on June 18th, 2013. The trial was held in camera, which means it was in private, so like no press and members of the public. Agnes's parents did not agree to this, and they didn't want the trial to be held in private. Like, they wanted people there. And I mean, I would too. I'd be like, you murdered my baby, and I want the whole world to know. But I think maybe it was in camera just because of the press coverage. This had already sparked a lot of attention. And also, he wasn't at the time of the trial, but he was a minor at the time of the crime. So I think he was still kind of protected, because that's the whole thing. His name wasn't supposed to be released to the press, but it did get released somehow. Not sure what happened there, but we all know he did it. The prosecution didn't want him to get special treatment because he was a minor at the time of the crime. So they asked for 30 years and civil commitment. The civil commitment would have been for his mental problems. And I saw an article with his parents that mentioned that he had a form of schizophrenia. I only saw that in one article, so I'm not sure if that's accurate. It was an article with his parents, so I feel like it probably is. But even if that's true, I'm not bashing schizophrenics. Lots of people have schizophrenia. I know someone with schizophrenia. She's not a murderer. So yes, he apparently has some sort of mental defect going on, but I'm not allowing that as an excuse for anything he did. The jury was on the same wavelength as me, and they were like, 30 years, fuck that. And they sentenced him to life in prison on June 28th, 2013. This was only the second time that a juvenile offender was given life imprisonment in France. And the first one was later acquitted. Now, he did appeal the decision, of course, because, you know, they always do. I think they just have to. I don't fucking know. But the appeal was denied on October 10th, 2014. He is getting some kind of treatment. He's in like a treatment, mentally ill sort of criminal jail type prison place. I don't really know. But he is, I guess, getting treatment. And I don't think he's getting out. There are talks that he could get out and be eligible for like parole or something. I personally hope he doesn't get it, because I think he's where he belongs. And his parents have said in later interviews, they said that he feels no remorse for his crimes. And I saw one article where a cop said, yeah, he told us he had one regret, getting caught. So that's why I feel like he should be in jail. He has no remorse. He's going to get out and do it again if you let him out. And now, I did mention Matthew's parents right there about the remorse. And so I do want to talk about them a little bit more, because I told you earlier that I think they kind of suck. Because in 2016, they wrote a book about their experience with these crimes. It's called Parents in Perpetuity. In French, of course, that's the translated title. I don't know if it's been translated in other languages. I didn't look. Agnes's parents were pretty upset by this book, and so that's why I didn't read it. It felt wrong to me. Her parents called the release of the book indecent. They said it was a showbiz campaign. They were saying, you know, his parents have been in the media, you know, leading up to the release of this book more than we have been since our daughter was murdered. Like, this is gross. Meanwhile, his parents said, you know, they've felt shame and been embarrassed to speak about it, but now they did want to sort of put their experience out there. I don't know. To me, if it was Agnes's parents writing a book, I'd be okay with that. But I don't know, the perpetrator's family making money off the crime just feels icky to me, especially when the victim's family is not pleased about it. Like, if her parents had come out and been like, yeah, it's fine, we don't care, I probably wouldn't be so upset by it. But if you want to read the book, I'm not going to judge you. I mean, I do have a sort of morbidish curiosity toward it, but I just couldn't bring myself to read it. But if you want to check it out, go check it out. It's called Parents in Perpetuity. Now, as far as the school, the school actually closed 3 years after this crime in 2014. It wasn't directly related to this. I'm sure Agnes's murder did not help, but the school had been struggling for a little while. It had been having some budget issues, declining enrollment, and like I said, I'm sure the enrollment declined even more after this all came out. So yeah, that's going to bring us to the end of the tragic murder of Agnes Marin. A life cut way too early. At least Matthew's in prison, hopefully forever. It's about the only good thing I can say about this case. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And by the way, guys, The podcast is officially available on Pandora. I thought it was on Pandora this whole time, but my sister found out that it wasn't. There was some technical issues, but they've been fixed, and you can now find your favorite podcast on Pandora. So I'm pretty sure we're everywhere now. No hiding from me. Be sure to check the podcast out on Instagram at HaveMurderWillTravel. Always post pictures related to the case. You can find the podcast on Facebook at HaveMurderWillTravelPodcast. You can send me a nice email at HaveMurderWillTravel@gmail.com. Tune in next week to see where we travel next. Until then, don't forget to explore the world and stay alive. Bye.